speed. 1, 2, 3, 4. Hello, hello, and welcome to Moe's Paisley Penny Arcade. I am the Moe, and this is the Paisley Penny Arcade. How are ya? I hope you're doing well. Today is May the 14th of 2025, a Wednesday. How can you tell it's Wednesday? Well, because you're in the Paisley Penny Arcade. Hey, how are you? Welcome. Come in. Find a seat. There's plenty of places to sit. Nice big fluffy chairs, beanbag chairs, overstuffed chairs, understuffed chairs, if that's what you're into. Got those weird chairs that you kneel on, if you're into that. There's something for everyone here, and everyone for something here, and whatever. And there you are. So come on in. Have yourself a little bit of fun, or a lot of fun. The world. Oh, what a world, what a world, as Margaret Hamilton so appropriately said in The Wizard of Oz. Oh, didn't she put that so loverly? Yes, she did. Yes, she so very loverly put it. Oh, what a world, what a world. And what a world it is. Has anyone given you a $44 million jet? No? Well, what are you doing wrong? I guess all you need to do is rule a country. I won't get into it. Does it irritate me? Oh, you betcha it does. You betcha. Well, I'd be a fool not to take that, would you? I'd be a fool not to. They want to give me a,
I'd be touched in the head. Well, if someone wanted to give me a, if someone wanted to give me a jug of whiskey, and I'd be a fool. I'd be touched in the head, touched, I tell you. It's like Sam Sneed said, if they want to give you a putt, well, you don't say I'm going to go ahead and putt it. No, sir. No, sirree. You just you take the putt and you walk to the next hole and you say thank you. That's what I'm going to do. Even though it's against the Constitution of the United States, by zingy, by golly, by jingles, by emollient law, I'm not. That's what I'm going to do.
Oh, what the heck? It's just so mind-bending. It's bending my brain. It's all right. My brain was bent a long time ago. It don't take much to bend my brain no more. I don't know what that is. Don't know it. Some sort of accent. The Old West accent is the compliments of every old movie ever made. Walter Brennan, kind of.
Now, Walter Brennan kind of talked like, I know he didn't talk like that. Not at all. Not even close to that. That was horrible.
It's like my Jimmy Stewart imitation, which I won't torture you with today. It's just the worst there is. I had friends who made fun of my imitations in high school, and I really thought they were good. You know, my imitations were, I'd say, here's my, you know, imitation of so-and-so, and they would literally groan. It would just, it would hurt their ears so badly that they would just groan. And I would think, oh, they're just giving me a hard time because, you know, maybe they're a little jealous of my skills, my rich little type skills in mimicry. But no way. I was just terrible, as the French say, terrible. My God, he's just manure-like skills when it came to mimicry, apery, as we will, with a real emphasis on the ape part of that. Oh, God. So how are you? You having a good week? I hope so. It's midweek where I live. Actually, every day is midweek in some form or another. I've been getting up at the crack o' dawn, as we say in these here parts. The crack o' dawn. Why? Because Coco gets up at the crack o' dawn, something puppies have a tendency to do, and is ready to get up. It's like, why are you guys asleep? Is there something wrong with you? Are you ill? Are you lazy? Are you, you know, you humans need to get up. It's light time. What is wrong with you? So up we get. Crack o' dawn around here is about, you know, 5:45 in the morning. So by 6 o'clock, we're, you know, out of bed and dragging ourselves to the back door to let her out. And she's ready to go out by that time. And, you know, we tried to come back to bed, but no, you know, that doesn't work at all. So she's got her brass knuckles and her blackjack, you know, her sap, as they call them, ready to beat us about the head and shoulders and get us moving for the day. So I was on CA's show yesterday, and we had a good old time, the way we always have a good old time together, and talked about this. I talked about this some because I'm complaining, and I do complain, and, you know, so I complain there. But I'm getting used to it, actually. She didn't get up until 6:30 today, and I was worried about her. I was my eyes flew open at about, 5 o'clock, and I finally should get back to sleep. And 6 o'clock came, and she wasn't up, and I was like, oh, no, what's going on here? You know, this is not right. And thought, oh, no, what's going on? And so I managed to go back to sleep until she realized that she had overslept, and then she was freaked out and wake up. But I love her. We love her very much. She's cute and cantankerous and annoying at times, but that's the love of it all. You know, a puppy. She's still very much a puppy and will be for the next 17 years, you know, whatever it is. And I hope she lives to be much older than that. I know how things work. I'm deluding myself, I know. I dilute myself often with water, sometimes with, you know, other liquids. But that's a different story altogether, changing my molar weight, sometimes my bicuspid weight as well. But that's chemistry. And we dare not mix chemistry and dentistry because God knows what's going to happen. Ha, 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 ha. Oh, he's so droll. No, I'm not. Trust me, being married will change how you feel about yourself. That's for sure. I used to think I was witty. Now I think I'm something else. It just rhymes with it. But that's a different story altogether. So today, I'd like to talk about one of my favorite subjects, and that's divination. From time to time, I actually talk about something that makes a little sense in my life. And I could talk about, that big old jumbo jet airplane with the 17 bathrooms and the maid's quarters and the, you know, the swimming pool. I'm sure it's got a swimming pool. Yeah, I don't think you could have a swimming pool on a plane very easily, could you? Maybe you could. I don't know. Maybe you can have all sorts of things. Could you have a bowling alley? Could you? Wow. That would
be really something to have a bowling alley in. I would be sorry. Just the image of that. Your turn, Mr. President. You're up. Or a pool table. Crap, where'd the balls go? Oh my God. It's just so absurd. This, you know, the world can be so absurd at times. So incredibly, ridiculously absurd. And I love absurdity, but not at taxpayers' expense. How much is it going to be to fly that thing? I mean, you know, it's gigantic. I think they can fit 4 or 5 football stadiums in that thing. You know, they're going to have the Super Bowl in that. Oh, my God. I mean, what are they thinking? Oh, they're going to fly fish in that thing. If I'm not here next week, he'll know something happened because of this. Not that he listens to, or anyone listens to this, but you are. I know you are, and I thank you for that. But, oh, my God, you know. Yeah, with my luck, Pam Bondi is listening to this, and she's going to call him up with, oh, sir, with tears in her eyes, you know. Oh, God, if you can't laugh at it, you know, you're really not in good shape. I can laugh at it, because I'm old. I'm really old. Oh, they're going to run the Kentucky Derby there next year. Wouldn't that be nice? Yeah. Sir, we're going to run the Kentucky Derby here. That'd be great. He doesn't have to go anywhere. They can just fly it around and it'd be really wonderful. Super Bowl would be great. I'm looking forward to the Super Bowl and the Jumbo Jet. Yeah. Anyway. absurd. Things are so absurd. But that's the way it goes. sir, tears in my eyes. There really are tears in my eyes. I'm sure there'll be at least one gold toilet in there. Oh, my God. Gold-plated barf bags, you know. Oh, my God. So, anyway, how's the world treating you? I hope it's treating you well. And if you can't laugh, you're in big trouble. Because then what do you got left, right? You just sit around and mope and look angry all the time and maybe cry a little. And I don't see that there's any use for that. Crying is, I mean, there are times to cry. There are definitely times to complain. I complain a fair amount, I must admit. I do complain from time to time. Oh, God. Man. But what I thought I'd talk about today is, like I said, one of my favorite topics, which is divination. I love to talk about divination. I love to practice the art. And one thing I do is I take it for granted. I have been divining, as we say, you know, using oracles pretty much all my life. And there's a certain point where you get to the sweet spot, where it is where it just works. It works and it works and it works. There was one time in the past, I would say 50 years, when it didn't work for me. And that was when I was with a friend, as a matter of fact, the friend who passed in February, and he had a girlfriend. And the girlfriend wanted a reading for the two of them. And I'll be honest with you, I was not a fan of the girlfriend because she was, she was very closed off, very confrontational, and seemed a little bit difficult, I'll put it that way. And she was very young, much younger than he and I were, where we were very close to the same age. He was a few months older than I. And so I laid out the cards, and I'd been reading for quite a while, and I laid out the cards and looked at them and could not make any sense of them at all. They were like linear B, you know, Heinrich Schliemann's Linear B from Troy. And I looked at these hieroglyphs that I could not read, and I was just, oh my God, I can't read anything here. And she didn't believe me. She goes, really? Is this true? I heard you were really good. And I said, well, I heard that too, but I can't read anything here. I'm very sorry. And she said, I'm sure that's true. And she was really getting snide and very insulting to me. I said, I just couldn't read anything. And I said, I'm sorry. Tell you what, let me just write down the cards and I'll look at them later. So that was what we did. I had actually taken a trip to where he used to live, which was in Albuquerque for a while. And so I picked up the cards and put them away, and I had written them down. And later on that night, after we'd gone out to a nice dinner, and I looked at the cards, and without having to be aware of what was going on, I did look and see what the card said, and was horrified at what the cards were saying, and that was that it was a terrible match, and that they were not going to get along, and that they would be disastrous together, and that it was going to end pretty quickly. And that's exactly what happened. And I did tell him that before I left. I said, look, the cards aren't great. And I just want to let you know that that's why I couldn't read it. I just couldn't read it then. I wasn't doing it on purpose. I just couldn't read it. And so sometimes when you're in a situation, and that was, by the way, the only time that's ever happened, that I blocked it that clearly or that strongly, where I've been able not to see anything. It was weird. It was really weird. But I think it was, who knows, maybe she'd have set me on fire or something. I'm not sure. But that's what happened. That's what happened that day. And I think that that was a form of self-preservation for me. Maybe it really was. I found out later that she was prone to extreme fits of violence, and that it was a difficult breaking of the situation between the two of them. Very attractive girl. I thought she could have been sweet. She wasn't sweet to me necessarily. She didn't like me. That was obvious. And so, but it was a wonderful thing, because what it did was it showed me the power of this tool, of any divinatory situation. And that is, man, we've got a lot of power at our fingertips, whether it be tarot or astrology or even a pair of dice. One of these days I'll talk about my dice oracle that I put together that is really very good. It's easy, it's quick, no one knows what you're doing. They think you're just some sort of compulsive person with a pair of dice. But what you're doing is you're asking questions, you roll the dice, they answer, you roll the dice, they answer. And I think that divination is cool. And people don't have to know what you're up to. In fact, in a way, it's kind of no one's business but your own. Like what you really do when you go home and get on the computer. It's no one's real business except your own, except the ISP, the people who work there, who peek in on what you're doing, the foreign countries that are watching you, the hackers who, the people are going to, blackmail you later. That's all that really matters, isn't it? I figure no matter what I'm doing online, someone's watching. And if they're really going to, make a deal out of what this crazy old man is doing, then let them. It's okay, I've lived this long. If they want to make a deal out of, the crazy things that I do online, look at anyway, because I don't do anything. But if they want to just say, why is he interested in yo-yos? He's an old man. Why only the yo-yos? Or why the Turkish flutes? What is it with the Turkish flutes? That's weird. He's weird. I don't like that. He's making creepy. Better yet. Why is he? Oh, I'm doing an imitation. I said I wouldn't. I do apologize. So just some things about, you don't have to have a deck of tarot cards on you all the time. You don't have to have I Ching coins on you. But because really divination is something that we all carry all the time. We call it intuition. Let me change that. And since I've made my living, I guess we should say, because that's what it is, over the past 100 to 200 years doing this, I thought I would just talk about it and urge you not to be afraid to trust your intuition, because it's a pretty cool thing. One of the things about intuition is that it's, man, we've got it. We've all got it. It was hounded out of us from the time of, I'll say, the Judeo-Christian ethic, let's say. Maybe from the time of monotheism on, and I don't know if that's exactly true or not. Yeah, I don't know if that's true or not. I don't think all monotheistic religions are as down on the concept of intuition and listening to it as people like to think. But I think that mostly that's kind of true. There's a lot of fear surrounding what used to be called, let me see if I can do this right now,
the occult.
I don't know how that sounded. But I tried to do it right, you know. I don't know if that sounded good at all or not. But the idea of the occult, the idea of the... And all that means is the hidden, you know. The occult means hidden. And the reason it was hidden is because people were being drawn and quartered and burned at the stake for this information that was... just not within the confines. They weren't coloring in the lines, so to speak. So people were being hounded literally to death. Literally to death. And so people began to hide the stuff that they believed in. And all that they believed in was just something that was not quite along the lines of what other people wanted them to believe in. So... one of those things, well, look at the way women were treated. Once a woman became postmenopausal, she began to change the way she looked. And especially if she was a skilled herbalist, what'd they do? They said, oh, beware, she's a witch. Let's treat her horribly and, you know, and once a year at Halloween, drag her out and use her as a prop in a, you know, Halloween costume play or something. I'm kidding. But you get the drift. Put them out on the edge of town or force them to live in a forest and go out there when you need them for something, for herbs or especially 11 herbs and spices to make chicken or whatever the case may be. And then the rest of the time you shun them and fear them and just despise them. And that's really horrific. That's absolutely horrific. And stuff like that happened and happens and has always happened. And that was mostly due to the fact that there was fear, lots of fear, a ton of fear. So I think that it's one of those things that we have to live with, you see. One of those things that we have to live with. And there's still that kind of fear in the occult. But I think that we should not be afeared of it. We should not be afraid. We shouldn't be afraid of anything, quite frankly, at all. Just not at all. There's nothing to be afraid of. Don't be afraid of your intuition. Sometimes it's not a good thing to know what's coming. I will attest to that. I have gotten information, and then there's not a darn thing that you can do to change it. And that's very tough, and that has been very difficult for me. Luckily, I had no idea my buddy was going to die this year. I knew he was depressed. I knew that he didn't do himself in. It was just natural causes. But I didn't have a clue. I really didn't. I had no idea it was coming. However, other people, yes, I've known, and other things coming, I have known, and have been unable to do anything about it. Our dog last year, I knew something was coming. I was paranoid about it. I knew something was going to happen. I thought someone was trying to hurt her. She did die. It was natural causes. There was nothing I could have done. It made me paranoid. It made me crazy. This isn't always a blessing, but it comes with the territory. But I'm not urging you to go to that extreme, but I've been doing it for so long, and my mother had it, and my paternal grandmother was very strong with it. So I, you know, what can I say? But I'd like to talk to you about how to approach the process and how to make it work for you in your life. And this is kind of a continuation of some other conversations I've had. Rule number one, relax. There's really nothing to it. If you've ever tried to read the cards, if you've ever tried to look at a chart, number one is just relax. Most people get very tense. They get all uptight. Don't be uptight. People have been doing this since there have been people doing this, which has been forever. And people have used bones, they've used rocks, they've used seashells. They still use seashells, bones, and rocks, by the way. I don't like to use bones. There's something in me that says I don't want to use something that was necessarily part of something that lived on this planet. And then, you know, we strip the meat off of it. I'm not into that. I don't know why. But I'm not a fan of that. Maybe because I grew up in an anatomy department. My dad was a veterinary surgical anatomist, and he taught that. And I was present for classes and labs and dissections and surgeries, and I just spent a lot of time around skeletons, human cadavers, animal skeletons. And, you know, I'm kind of over it, to be honest with you. So I don't like using that for divination, which to me is kind of, I would like it to be devoid of that, you know. And at one time I wanted to be an Egyptologist, and I've just kind of now realized I don't think I would have enjoyed it that much, because it would have been filled with that sort of thing. I have little sarcophaguses in my office, and I've even got a big one. It's not real. I don't think I would like that. And you know, the point of that is that too, those are remnants of my ancestors' burials, and I don't think I would have enjoyed that in the long run. As a matter of fact, they just found more of them, and what they do, they disturb their sleep. And I think, what if they were right about their philosophy of what happens after death? How wrong is that? I've been thinking that for decades, actually. Enough. Stop digging them up. But of course, if they don't dig them up, someone else will find them. And then they're still disturbed, and all the stuff in there gets sold on the black market. It's just not. Anyway, so relax. I'm trying to relax. Here I am getting tense. Number two. One of the things you want to do when you're doing any type of reading is allow your mind to get an immediate hit. And I mean immediate. That is so vital. We have a tendency to ponder, you know, cogitate, ruminate, anticipate, you know. So here I've got my cards here, and the deck I use is the deck that I designed and drew and had printed up. And now that there's only a 30% tax, when before he came to office, there was a no percent tariff, I should say. So it's not a tax. Merry Christmas. It's only a tariff. Anyway, shut up, Mo. That's not politics. We're not talking politics. I can't help it. I'm an old. Remember, I was around when Nixon was one of those presidents. First president I remember, I'm going to date myself, Dwight D. Eisenhower, Ike. I remember Ike. So that's how old I am. Yeah. Yeah, I was around when the commies were trying to infiltrate. Who am I kidding? They're still trying. No, they're not. No, they're not. No, that's not who's trying to infiltrate. Shh, shh, shh. Settle down, Mo. So, what was I going to do? Oh, I have these cards. And so, we talk about instant information. Well, I seem to be stuck in my head about this plane. So I have the cards, and I've shuffled them up, and I've got a card on the top, and I don't know what's underneath it. But I'm going to ask, tell me about the plane, and I'm going to turn over. And I get the Six of Swords, science, which is fascinating. The Six of Swords. Well, swords are air. So immediately I think, oh, swords are air. And the Six of Swords is ruled by Mercury. Mercury in Gemini, right? Is that right? I think that's right. I don't have the astrological signs on my cards, which I was stupid not to put them on there, but I didn't. And this is a very complicated card. I did this as a Rube Goldberg card. For those of you who don't know who Rube Goldberg was, he was a genius cartoonist. And 20s, 30s, 40s, maybe even into the 50s, where one thing led to another. There's an A and a B and a C, and there were ridiculous things like, you know, you pull on this lever and then this happens and a monkey throws a bowling ball at a picture of pins on a door and the door slams shut and it does this and then something else happens. And eventually all you're trying to do is put a bottle in a baby's mouth. And I have this with this card. And the whole thing, interestingly enough, is to give a vaccine of a flu shot to someone. But it starts with a lightning rod and getting lightning. And so it's a very complicated card. And I think what I'm getting from this is that it has to do with all these different steps that lead to something completely different. So in looking at this, tell me about the plane, that the plane, I'm just going to say it, is designed for something completely different. So it is, in other words, a payoff for something to happen way down the line. So that makes sense to me. I mean, it's just like it's the first step. It's pulling the lever for something else to happen. Something else will happen, and then something else will happen, and eventually there will be. It's to bring something to fruition. Makes sense to me, okay? And I don't think there's anyone who doesn't believe that. It's just a matter of, okay, he'd be, you know, whatever, whatever. And I'm not, you know, trust me, I don't think anyone doesn't believe that. The question then would be to me, is he going to get away with it? So here's another card, and you just go with the immediate hit. Boom. No. And I say that because I got the Five of Wands. And my Five of Wands, which is strife. And strife is Saturn. That's a Saturn card. And Saturn is pretty restrictive. Saturn is a constriction card. Saturn in Leo, as a matter of fact. Leo being a Trump sign. He's, I think, born in Leo. So Saturn in Leo is, you know, kind of the stifling of that energy. That's just immediate thoughts I'm having. But my Saturn card are five policemen in riot clothes, and they're holding batons. White batons that are very prevalent, and that was something I saw at Mardi Gras one year. I was right on the outside of a parade route, and they were coming my way, and I did not know what to do because behind me were about 100,000 people, and they wanted me to move. And when I got jabbed in the abdomen with one of those batons, I did move. It was incredible how you can do that when you're jabbed in the abdomen with a baton. So, yes, their strife is on the way for him. At least that's what this says. That somehow he may get to keep it, but it's not going to be Air Force One. At least that's what I think. So you just go with the immediate feeling you get, you know, you let it answer. Now, that's not always going to work. Obviously, I am very biased in this. And that's something that you have always got to consider. What is your bias? Am I biased in this? I'll turn over a card. I got the science card again. Yeah, that's the mind. So I am very biased in this. Another card. Does it make a big difference in me? Absolutely. The priestess card reversed. The priestess card reversed is saying it actually occludes the light. It gets in the way of the light because the priestess card is the moon. So that's the dark side of the moon, which means there's no light coming through. So my bias at this point in my life has actually disavowed me of any true light. So I have to be careful. So this has been true in the past. There have been people that I have said, I can't read for you anymore. For instance, if someone has been a client and they have then become a friend, I have to say, I'm sorry, I can't read for you anymore. And they say, well, why not? I say, because we've become friends. And I can't see the forest for the trees at this point. In other words, I can't see the light anymore because I now have a vested interest in your life. Now, that brings up an interesting point. It isn't that I don't want the best for everybody, because I do. But when someone becomes a friend or someone is a family member, it becomes very, very difficult to be completely and totally, objective. Doesn't it? Really? I mean, it really does. I mean, I've had to tell people some very difficult things in the past. And it's hard to do that because what happens is you shut off, you close the window, so to speak, and the light can't get in. That's a really good analogy. I like that. Or is that a metaphor? Or it's not a simile, is it? No, simile would be like a window. So there we are. You get that immediate hit from the card, or when you look at a chart. We'll talk about that in a minute. Then you think, you see, that's number three. Then you think about what it is that you've seen, and you ponder it for a while. You really do let your mind, you cogitate, ruminate. You may obfuscate. Or whatever. It's something you do. You really do. Sometimes, I mean, I used to, and still, you lay out the cards and you get an immediate hit from them. And then you think, okay, now, why? And then you find it sometimes. Sometimes you don't. You have to go with what you feel and what you think. But it's always a good way to really get to the bottom of it. Good readers sometimes get the whole message in the first 30 seconds, and then you have to do a reading, you know, but that's the way it goes. Now, the next thing is to understand that life is always a story. Every life, everything that happens in life is in fact a story. That's just all there is to that. There is no other way of looking at it. Life is always a story. And so what that means is that's how you look at tarot, or you look at astrology. And I think astrology is brilliant in that way. I'm a Vedic astrologer. So our charts look different, at least the way I do it. I do the Southern Indian chart, which is a big square. And it lends itself, in my opinion, to storytelling very, very well. One thing you can do with cards is really good is just shuffle them up and just lay out the cards one after the other and let the cards tell you a story. And don't worry about accuracy. You're making it up as you go along. But just tell a story. Or with charts, what you do is you take a chart of a famous person. This is a great, great way to learn as you go. And what you're going to do is make their life fit into the chart. And that's really a great way to learn. What happened was I was looking at charts. I was learning Vedic astrology. This was 30 some years ago. And I was at the 12th House bookstore, the brick and mortar store back in the 90s. And I was being stunned by what I was discovering, that this works. Not only does it work, but it looks so well. And so I asked Mark, and John was there, John Joseph, and I said, I have to ask you a question. This is so clean. This is so powerfully right. Am I making it work, or does it actually really work? And they said, This is how it works. You learn by doing this, by making it work. Yeah, you're probably fitting some things in there, but that's what you do. And it was absolutely right. I mean, I don't know if it was fitting it in or if that was just the way it was, but I'll be doggone. I got pretty darn good at that, at making things work. So you do that. You run the chart of some, and you do it your way. If you're doing Western astrology, it doesn't matter. You take that famous chart and you say, okay, Mozart, prodigy, musical, where is that in this chart? And you find it and you go, well, of course, it would have to be here. Or, you know, Nikola Tesla, you find poverty, extreme poverty at the end of his life. Where is that? That's here. Okay, here's this poverty. And his unwillingness to be a part of the big machine, which could have been. I mean, you know, he worked for Thomas Edison for a while and refused to become a part of Edison's big, huge conglomerate, you know, his pocket-a-pocket machine. You know, Edison was truly held, he still holds the record for the most patents in the world ever. And he's been gone for, you know, over 100 years, I would imagine. And yeah, he figured out, he had a system, he had a plan. If you invented something under his employ, he owned that patent. And he was ruthless about it, absolutely brutally ruthless. And he was a ruthless man in many ways. He did things that I cannot abide, which was the electrocution of animals to sell the DC current system, which he failed to do. Thank goodness. I'm not because of that. I mean, I don't. Maybe DC would have been not as efficient, not by any stretch. You know. Wow, horrible thing. Anyway, so you find that. You find that many of the, for example, Nikola Tesla actually did invent the radio before Marconi, but Marconi got the patent. Tesla was awarded the patent on the radio after a while, posthumously, but they had to give it back to Marconi because they realized it would have owed Tesla's Tesla. I think it was given to him posthumously, but the point is they would have owed him any, if there were any people in his family anywhere, millions and millions of dollars because they screwed up and gave it to Marconi. So they said, oh, we have to change this, but he did invent it before Marconi. You can find that in his chart if you look for it. So you look for it and you say, this is it, this is it, this is it right here. That's a beautiful way to learn. You find it and you decide, this is it. And you feel like you're making it up. But that's the intellectualization of the process, which is so necessary to the intuitive part as well. Because the mind is the mind. You have to have the two parts jive. They have to fit in, right? Yeah, we'll just say yes. That's good. Anyway, so that's that, right? You find the story in someone's life. You can go house to house and tell a story, starting with the ascendant. He was young. This is what his upbringing was like. This is a great way to do things, I think, right? I think anyway. And do watch out for your personal feelings about people. About things like that. One of the most spectacular charts to look at is Hitler's, because you can see just about everything he was and what he became by looking at his chart. You will see who the man was and how he became what he was, which was, in my opinion, a complete lunatic, monster. Well, he wasn't a monster per se. Yeah, I think he was. Anyone who would cause the genocide of millions of people, the ethnic cleansing of an entire people, with the goal of completely removing them from the planet. There's something missing there, you know. And he damn near got it done, you know. So you have to watch out for your feelings, though. But in this process, let them run rampant, but find all those little pieces. Now, later on, you can go back and you'll say, oh, well, that was my personal feelings. But sometimes your personal feelings are very valid. Okay? That's the thing. Intuition. Now, what is intuition based on? What is it about? It's about feeling and listening and allowing your attention to be guided. Now, that's the hard part. Allowing your attention to be guided. We have to allow ourselves to be taken on a ride. Now, when we go to a movie, let's say you're watching Indiana Jones, right? You've not seen it before. And you're sitting there in the theater, and you're on a wild ride. You don't know what to expect, but man, it is a wild ride, and you're enjoying every minute of it. And it's just holy mackerel! I've never seen anything quite like this. Years later, you'll realize that guy in the beginning is oh my God, I've forgotten his name. Oh my God, he's a big actor now. I'll think of it. My goodness, he was, I'm not going to worry about it. I'll think of it. But, you just have this wonderful time. And that's what, you just enjoy the movie. It's filled with thrills. Some of it's just kind of like, oh, really? You know, but for the most part, it's something you simply experience. You just experience. That's what intuition should be. That's what intuition should be. Intuition should be an experience that you just watch and you listen and you try not to second guess. You try not to, you know, question too much. If you sit back and go, at the snakes part, you know, snakes, why did it have to be snakes? If you remember that movie and he falls in the tomb, you know, the well of souls. Yeah, that's what it's called. The well of souls. If you see bad prints of it on TV, you can see that there's a pane of glass between Indiana Jones and the snakes, because you can see the reflection of the cobra on the glass. And that first time I saw that, I said, well, that's not in the movie. And that's because it's a bad print. And it's not supposed to be shown, but there it is. And you go, well, that's not intuition. That ruins the effect. And that's what too much thought is like. It's like that pane of glass. It ruins it. And that's what we do when we question things. We think too much. Now, in the movie theater and on good prints of the movie, you don't see that reflection. You don't want that reflection. Reflection too much, it gets in the way. You have to allow intuition to be without that reflection. You don't want to question it too much. And that's when you just start to talk. And you say to them, why does this strike a bell with me? And you find that people begin to just fall out of their chairs. They really do. And they say, how could you know that? Someone said that to me just this morning. And you go, I don't know. You know, that's just the process. And after about 30, 40 years, you begin to get a little bit used to it, but not really. You never should get used to it. It should never become mundane to you. It's wonderful, and it is miraculous, and it is something that is so powerful that it should literally drop you right out of your chair. It is something that is so incredible that it's such a zip and a zing and a kapow that it should thrill you every time it happens, and it always happens to me. Always happens to me, and I love it. Literally, people say things like, oh, Mo, how could you do that? How could you know this? It's like, I don't know. You know, thank you for the compliment. But, and I always think, man, it's not me. I don't know what it is. But it's that's the part that you want to get to. And the only way you can do that is to listen. It's to listen and to pay attention and to feel. And to just, you have to believe in yourself and believe in the process. And that comes with experience. One of the best experiences you can have is to read palms. And when someone gives you their hand, boy, is that an intimate act. You wouldn't believe. It's so intimate. And you look into someone's hand and you get feelings right away. And you look into that hand and you look at the lines and suddenly you're getting all sorts of information about them, about their lives, about are they happy or not? What's coming up for them? What's the past about for them? And you can get things and feel things. And the key is to know what to say and what not to say. You have to be tactful. You really do. I mean, it's important to be tactful. As often as you can be. And still, my whole point is I try never to say anything that isn't going to, well, so I say something that isn't going to help, right? Right. So how do you build these skills? Well, I like to use playing cards. Simple. You can do the black and red thing where you just set down two piles, one with black cards and one with red cards, and you're not worrying about whether you're getting them right or not. You're simply saying, face down, black card, red card, keeping in mind that there's an equal pile of each, right? So there's, 13 cards here, 13 cards here, then another 13 cards here, until you have about half a deck of red and half a deck of black. And then you just turn them over nonchalantly and take a look. How right was I and how wrong was I? Doesn't matter how right or wrong you were. It's trying to do it that stretches the intuitive mind, okay? And you don't have to feel the back of the cards or anything. Now, another way to do that is with tarot. And what you do is you take the cards and you take the cards and you just feel the back of the card, or you just hold it and you say, all right, is this a major arcana, minor arcana? If it's minor, is it a disc, a cup, a sword, or is it a wand? And I'm thinking this is a wand, and I turn it over, and interestingly enough, it's my death card, but there is mistletoe in this card as a dart being thrown. So there is a wand there, and I understand why it's there. Okay, so you do that again. And okay, what have I got here? This has got to be a cup because I just feel it. And there, it is a cup. It's my eight of cups. And I do that. And I'm just going to say that I'm pretty good at this. I can usually get about 8 out of 10. And that's because I've done this with these cards. Now, I won't be able to do that with a regular deck of playing cards, but with my tarot cards, and it's not because I know them or something. It's just because you're in that. You do this, you know. You'll get that good, too, because you learn to trust and you learn to feel. But that's a good way to start that, okay? Never be dissuaded. Never let someone laugh at you and then let it hurt you. Yeah, don't worry about such things. That's rubbish. And here's another thing. Don't read for yourself. I don't think that's such a good idea. I do from time to time, but I usually regret it. It's not a good idea. Reading for oneself is not necessarily the best of ideas. I've done it. I usually use the I Ching if I have a question for myself. And even then, I usually am very gentle with it. Reading for oneself is not easy because remember what I said about don't get too involved with it? Don't take it too personally? Well, you can't do that if you're reading for yourself. I say I can, but the truth of the matter is I'm not sure that I can. It's kind of hard to do because we care about ourselves a lot. If you don't, then whew, shouldn't be into divination. You've got to really care about yourself. You really got to, you just have to. Eventually, you may be able to do it. I can do it if I really need some questions answered and I'm really willing to look at them directly. but wait on that, okay? Find someone to read for you. There's always someone available to read for you, I guarantee. Okay? Always a trusted choice. One, two, listen. Very trusted choice. A lot of people there who know exactly what they're doing. Okay. All right. Well, that's good. I think we got it. Yeah. Cool stuff, divination. I don't know where the information comes from. A lot of people claim they know. And if they do, good for them. But I don't. All right. I hope you have a good week. I hope this made sense. I hope it was worth doing. I could have griped about what's going on in the world for an entire hour, but I decided it just wasn't what I wanted to do, and I did think... some people apparently like hearing me rant, but I didn't feel like doing it today. Maybe next week I'll just gripe and rant and roll and rock and... Anyway... Hey, I love you, and I mean it. Thank you for listening. Here comes the rain. Here comes the rain, cooling things off a little bit. I love you all. Please have a lovely, lovely week. And until next week, I wish you all peace and love. Bye.
Until next we meet, I'll be waiting for you right here in the Paisley Penny Arcade.